Federal officials are investigating an Air Alaska flight that dropped about 5,000 feet on Wednesday. National Transportation Safety Board investigator Clint Johnson says the de Havilland DHC-8 was en route from Anchorage to Homer. The plane was flying at about 12,000 feet when it dove to about 7,000 feet. The pilot regained control of the twin-engine turboprop and returned to Anchorage after declaring an emergency. Johnson says that the flight data and cockpit voice recorders are on their way to Washington, D.C. and should be examined today. The findings will help determine the course of the investigation. Air spokesman Steve Smith says there were 11 passengers and three crew members on board. Flight 874 left Anchorage at 10:29 and returned at 10:59 Wednesday morning. State troopers have identified the 19-year-old woman who was shot by her male moose hunting partner on Tuesday. It was Tarsicia Heath of Dot Lake. The fatal shooting happened near Dot Lake, just off of the Alaska Highway. Trooper spokesperson Beth Ibsen says the man who shot her with a high-powered hunting rifle said it was an accident. Troopers have not released his identity or more details of the shooting. No charges have been filed, and troopers continue to investigate. Joshua David Berger is now a convicted sex offender. The 37-year-old Juneau man yesterday morning pled guilty to a single felony count of first-degree indecent exposure. It signals the possible end of a long-running sex abuse case that started over a year ago. Prosecutors in May of last year initially charged Berger with 100 counts of sexual abuse of a minor. That was for an alleged abuse over an 8-year period. Those charges were later dismissed, and prosecutors then charged Berger with 4 counts of sexual abuse of a minor or attempted sexual abuse of a minor. Those charges were dropped as part of a plea and sentence agreement that included the lower charge of indecent exposure. Berger did not say anything aside from responding to an inquiry by Superior Court Judge Philip Pallenberg that's usually posed during all change of plea proceedings.
Do you understand what you're charged with there?
I do, Your Honor.
And to that charge, what plea do you enter?
Guilty.
Right.
Berger could be sentenced to an 8-year prison term with 6 years suspended or 2 years to serve in prison. Probation will be 10 years. He'll be required to register as a sex offender for 15 years and participate in any sex offender treatment program. The maximum sentence for indecent exposure is 99 years in prison and a $50,000 fine, but Berger would likely fit in the presumptive range of 2 to 12 years as a first-time felon. Judge Pallenberg did not give any indication whether he planned to accept or deny the plea and sentence agreement. Berger was dressed in a dark business suit during the hearing. He was ordered to Lemon Creek Correctional Center to await formal sentencing. A lengthy hearing is scheduled for November 16th. Before the hearing got underway yesterday morning, friends of the victim and other supporters directed epithets and inappropriate comments at Berger and his mother when they initially entered the packed courtroom. Minutes later, two Juneau police officers arrived and positioned themselves at both ends of the courtroom gallery. Judge Pallenberg said he recognized that such cases usually bring up strong emotions.
If there are any outbursts during the proceedings, there are officers here, and I am fully prepared to have someone taken into custody if that's necessary. I will expect there to be comments on the proceedings or any outbursts.
Well, the judge's admonition and the officer's presence seem to have an impact. The observers remain quiet and respectful, at least while in the courtroom during the hearing. Unless Congress creates and agrees to a viable plan to reduce trillions of dollars from the deficit, the federal government will face massive spending cuts on January 2nd. The cuts, known as the sequester, will slash $1.2 trillion from federal agencies. The deeply unpopular sequester will send ripples through virtually every element of federal government, and as APRN's Peter Granitz reports as part of a series, the cuts at the Pentagon could shock military spending in Alaska, both in the public and private sectors.
As part of the Budget Control Act of 2011, the Pentagon lost $487 billion, and it planned on that, crafting its defense policy to reflect leaner times. There was a second part of the Budget Control Act, one that stipulated if the supercommittee could not find agreement on deficit reduction, the federal government would cut an additional $1.2 trillion of spending. and about $500 billion of that sum will come from the Pentagon. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta has not hid his frustration, anger, and worry. Here he is speaking at a dinner in Washington in June.
It will pose, if it happens, and I've made this clear, an unacceptable risk to our ability to defend this country. Make no mistake, it will hollow out our force, it will weaken us at the very moment when the United States needs to remain the strongest military power on Earth.
But many think the Pentagon could use a right-sizing of what they call a bloated budget. Ben Freeman is an investigator with the nonpartisan Project on Government Oversight. He says the cuts would reduce defense spending by about $54 billion a year.
We spend far more than any of our enemies, our would-be enemies. And so to say that we're going to cut just 10% off of our budget, we're still going to spend far more than any other country in the world.
Still, Freeman says sequester is not the right approach. Specifics of just what the cuts mean to military operations and base life are hard to come by. Representatives from J-Bear, Fort Wainwright, and Eielson Air Force Base all said they are waiting on guidance from the Pentagon. And Lieutenant Colonel Elizabeth Robbins, a Pentagon spokesperson, says defense is waiting on guidance from the Office of Management and Budget.
It will force the release of temporary civilian employees and impose at least a partial hiring freeze and potentially unpaid furloughs on our Department of Defense civilian personnel.
President Barack Obama exempted military personnel from the cuts. The 21,000 members of the military in Alaska will not lose their jobs or see a reduction in pay. But the Pentagon still needs to plan on losing 10% of its budget, so the cuts to non-personnel spending will be even larger. Colonel Roberts says Congress needs to pass a law to stave off what she calls a disaster.
We know that it will universally disrupt our acquisition programs and our training programs, reducing base support services, delaying payments to medical service providers.
Much of that gets done outside of government. The Department of Defense spent $3 billion last year in Alaska on private contracts. The biggest recipient was Crowley Petroleum Distribution. Its headquarters are in Florida, and the company supplies the military with fuel. Its Alaska contracts in 2012 are worth more than $300 million. 80% of defense contracts in the state went to Alaska Native-owned businesses like PetroStar. PetroStar, a subsidiary of the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, also supplies the military with fuel. Since the beginning of 2012, PetroStar has been awarded contracts worth $200 million. No one from the companies was comfortable commenting on what potential cuts to the Pentagon would mean for business. Ben Freeman says more than half of the Pentagon budget is spent on contracts. And because of the exemption for military personnel, contractors can expect less business. But he says even if all the cuts went directly towards contracts, the industry would still take in more than $300 billion a year.
If you think $300 billion a year is catastrophic, I think you need a wake-up call.
It's not just contractors who could feel the pinch. So could civilians who live near bases, from the cashier at the grocery store to the carpenter who planned on doing work to a base employee's house. And weapon systems may come under even more scrutiny. In Alaska, Freeman says the F-22 should be in the sights of budget cutters. It's never flown in combat. It's expensive, and pilots complain of the plane's effects on their health.
If you have a plane that you're not really using to defend the nation, and it costs $50,000 an hour to fly, that's certainly a ripe candidate for some budget cuts.
But most think that's not how the sequester will work. Top brass at the Pentagon may not go through and find wasteful programs. They may reduce each program by a flat rate. And anyone associated with the military, enlisted members, contractors, and civilians, is likely to see changes. And until the Pentagon lays out what they are, everyone is left in the dark. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
And coming up in part three of the series, we'll take a look at the potential impacts on the oil and gas industry in Alaska. That's coming up Monday during Morning Edition.